Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about a new presentation over the weekend by Tesla's Director of Artificial Intelligence, Andrej Karpathy. Andrej shared some thoughts and new details on Tesla's transition over to Pure Vision, the removal of radar from the autonomy hardware suite, and some new details on what Tesla is doing outside of the vehicle to help push autonomy forward. So I'll recap the main points from there. We'll pull a couple of clips out as well, but I would recommend watching the entire talk. It's about half an hour long. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. We've also got an update from Elon Musk on Tesla's AI Day, another leaked email from Elon as quarter end approaches, some news on subscription offerings from Tesla, a couple more data points on the Plaid Model S, and Giga Berlin. Up and down day for Tesla stock today, but couldn't quite make it to four positive days in a row, finishing down 0.4% to $620.83. That did compare to the NASDAQ, which was up 0.8%. All right, so getting into this Andrej Karpathy presentation, these are always really fascinating to listen to. He kicked it off talking about just how it's kind of silly that we have these multi-ton metal vehicles driving people around being controlled by meat computers, as he puts it, and that Tesla thinks that they can replace that and should replace that with a silicon computer. So one of his first slides here just clearly lays out the advantages of that, namely reduced latency and increased awareness, both in terms of perspective and attentiveness. And of course, cost. There's a lot of human resources going into driving around cars today. So as we know, of course, this is already leading to advantages, improved safety. Andrej showed a couple of real-world examples demonstrating that principle. Automatic emergency braking first. I think we've all seen clips like that. He also showed a traffic control warning. So if someone didn't recognize a red light, the car did. And then he showed two clips here, which I want to play because I haven't seen clips like this from Tesla before, showing what Andrej calls pedal misapplication mitigation. Basically using the vehicle's interpretation of the surroundings to stop unintended acceleration when the driver actually meant to hit the brake instead of the accelerator.
These are examples from pedal misapplication mitigation, PMM. Here, a person is unparking from their driving spot, and they are trying to turn, and then they mess up, and they accidentally floor it. So they floor it right there, and the system kicks in. It sees pedestrians ahead of us, and it slams on the brakes and averts what would be a very gnarly situation in this case. Here's another last scenario I can show briefly. So this person is trying to park and they turn to the right here and they intend to press the brake, but they actually floor it. And the system again sees that there's no driving path forward and actually slams on the brakes and averts. In this case, this person is not going to be swimming in this river imminently.
I think these clips are particularly representative of Tesla because you may remember that about a year and a half ago, there were these claims that Tesla vehicles were just randomly accelerating without any input and causing accidents, which obviously didn't make much sense. It's kind of like this whole brake failure stuff in China. But of course, it got enough media attention that Tesla had to make a blog post denying it. NHTSA investigated. They found that no, there was no unintended acceleration. And here in these clips from Andrej, we're seeing the reality that Tesla is actually preventing unintended acceleration, leveraging their autonomous technologies to make the car safer. So that's why I say these clips are representative. They're kind of a microcosm of the Tesla situation more broadly, where the reporting and the perception is one way, but the reality is almost completely the exact opposite. It's happened with this acceleration stuff, it's happened with fires in the past, and oftentimes that idea also applies whenever we see a Tesla involved in an accident. So just wanted to call attention to those clips because those are the types of things you don't hear about when accidents are avoided. That doesn't generate a news story generally, like an accident would. Anyway, from there, Andrej went in to talk about their progress with the FSD beta and things like that, saying, quote, "It's actually fairly routine for us to have zero intervention drives, I would say, in sparsely populated areas like Palo Alto and so on. I would say we definitely struggle a lot more in very adversarial environments like San Francisco. A lot of people working in autonomy, of course, know all about that as well," end quote. That led him into showing a clip from a competitor doing self-driving. I think he said it was Waymo, a car with no driver doing a fully autonomous left-hand turn through a stoplight, with Andrej saying, okay, we've been seeing videos like this for a decade. What's the big deal with Tesla doing a zero intervention trip? Of course, as we know, Tesla believes the difference is in scalability, with others relying on LiDAR and HD mapping, which Tesla does not view as scalable either from a cost or sort of a data management maintenance of those HD maps perspective. So Andrej here talks about Tesla's hardware and starts to get into their decision to actually remove radar, focus purely on vision.
I mentioned we do not use high-definition maps and we do not use LiDAR. We only use video cameras. And in fact, the vision system that we have been building over the last few years has been getting so incredibly good that it's kind of leaving a lot of the other sensors in the dust. And so actually, the cameras are doing most of the heavy lifting in terms of the perception that you've seen in the car. And actually, it's gotten to the point that we are able to start removing some of the other sensors because they are just becoming these crutches that you start to not really need at all. So actually, 3 weeks ago, we started to ship cars that have no radar at all. So we've deleted the radar, and we are driving on vision alone in these cars. And the reason we are doing this, I think, is well expressed by Elon in this tweet. He's saying, when radar and vision disagree, which one do you believe? Vision has much more precision, so better to double down on vision than do sensor fusion. And what he's referring to is basically, like, vision is getting to the point where the sensor is like 100x better than, say, radar. Then if you have a sensor that is dominating the other sensor and is so much better, then the other sensor is actually starting to, like, really contribute. It's actually holding you back, and it's really starting to contribute noise to the former system. And so we are really doubling down on the vision-only approach. And actually, in this talk, what I would like to primarily talk about is how we have achieved vision-only control without radar and how we have released this quite successfully so far to the fleet.
So a couple thoughts listening to Andre there. He is clearly in full support of the decision to remove radar, noting that it's already contributing noise. So I think some people will find that reassuring. There had been some speculation that maybe Tesla was removing radar because of part shortages or whatever else. And that could possibly play a role in terms of the timing of a decision like this, but Tesla wouldn't make such an impactful change if they didn't really believe in that strategy moving forward. So as Andre said, he wanted to spend a fair amount of time in this presentation talking about why they think vision can do everything that radar offers them. And a lot of that comes down to figuring out distance of objects from the vision system alone. So here he gave an awesome example of some of their data from internal testing. So they had two cars, a lead car and a follow car, tracking the data from the follow car. And they told the lead car to just slam on the brakes as hard as possible, max deceleration, and then they would see the distance readings from radar and then from the vision system. Under that circumstance, the radar would actually momentarily lose the vehicle, which Andre shows in the graph there in the top right that the cursor has pointed to. And the yellow line there is the distance readings from radar. So you get this really jagged graph as the radar says, there's a car 100 feet away. Oh, now no car. Oh, now it's 60 feet away. Oh, now no car, etc. as it loses and then refines the car because of that intense deceleration. That same graph then has the distance of the lead car as measured by the vision system, and you can't really see it there, but it's the blue line that's just showing a smooth decline in the distance, not the jagged up and down that the radar is showing. So Andre gave a couple more examples of that and then said, of course, we could spend time smoothing out that curve for the radar, trying to make that better, trying to make the sensors agree more, sensor fusion, but why waste all that time, all that human capital pursuing that when they can get the same data in higher resolution from vision? So Andre posed the question to himself of, can vision do what radar does in terms of distance recognition? And he said the answer is, quote, an unequivocal yes, end quote. So he said, Tesla's not wasting people. There's only one team, the vision team. Now, Andre did still talk about using radar in an offline environment, so not actually making decisions for a production vehicle, but rather as a part of a data set that they can review with the benefit of hindsight, but also importantly, foresight, because if you've got a video clip that's happened in the past, you can see forward into that video clip, see what's gonna happen, a benefit you obviously don't have in a live environment. So we often see Tesla vehicles going out there testing with LiDARs on them. Tesla's never had any problem with using LiDAR as a tool. They just don't wanna put it on every single vehicle and use it to make decisions in real time. Tesla now just feeling comfortable to move radar into that bucket as well. What's cool is they'll still have, you know, a million vehicles out there with radar, so they can still collect that data and analyze it and use it in their training if they need to. They just don't need to have it in the vehicle to operate the system. So as we know, Tesla has been shipping cars without radar now for a few weeks. Andre, in this talk, which was yesterday, said that they have now accumulated 1.7 million miles on autopilot for vehicles not using any radar and that they have had no crashes yet. So obviously early stages, that's a good sign though. Tesla publishes their accident data each quarter. In the first quarter, they said that broad autopilot usage, there was one accident on autopilot for every 4.2 million miles driven. So obviously a great start, but too limited of a data set for us to determine much about efficacy of the vision-only system. And that's kind of where the shadow mode comes in, because Tesla has actually been running 7 different rounds of shadow mode on the vision-only system over, I think Andre said, the last 4 months. They have collected 1 million 10-second surround video clips. That's 1.5 petabytes of data, or 1,500 terabytes, and they have labeled 6 billion objects with accurate depth and velocity. Andre mentioned a couple of times throughout the presentation that he's not really sure how anyone would be able to accomplish this vision-only step without a huge fleet collecting a lot of data. He pointed out that to get any neural network signal, you need a large data set, so millions of videos here in Tesla's case, clean data set, so labeled data, and a diverse data set, so lots of different edge cases. Of course, you also have to have a way to find those edge cases and then label them once you do have them. So to find them, Andre said that Tesla has developed 221 manual triggers that they maintain and adjust, iterate on to collect those edge cases. So if the vision system's not agreeing with radar or vision's not agreeing with what the driver's doing, these are the triggers that then collect those clips that then Tesla has to feed into the neural network. Part of doing that is, of course, labeling. And Andre spent a decent amount of time talking about how Tesla is doing auto labeling. So we've heard Elon say that before, and I've noted how underappreciated that element is. But it sounds like Tesla's utilization of auto labeling is already pretty robust. And then optionally, they can have humans, of course, come in and clean that data up if needed, which would, of course, then help train the auto labeling neural network itself. This led Andre into talking about Tesla's compute power, not in the actual car itself, but offline, where this labeling and training and simulating is all taking place. So this is one of the most exciting parts of Andre's presentation. Let's listen to him talk about Tesla's supercomputer.
So I wanted to briefly give a plug to this insane supercomputer that we are building and using now. For us, computer vision is the bread and butter of what we do and what enables the autopilot. And for that to work really well, you need a massive data set. We get that from the fleet. But you also need to train massive neural nets and experiment a lot. So we've invested a lot into the compute. In this case, we have here a data set. We have a cluster that we're just building that is 720 nodes of 8x A100s of the 80 gigabyte version. So this is a massive supercomputer. I actually believe that in terms of flops, this is roughly number 5 supercomputer in the world. So this is actually a fairly significant computer here. We have 10 petabytes of hot-tier NVMe storage. And it's also an incredibly fast storage. So I believe 1.6 terabytes per second. This is one of the world's fastest file systems. And we have also a very efficient fabric that connects all of this. Because of course, if you're doing distributed training across your nodes, you need your gradients to be synchronized very efficiently. And of course, we are reading all of these videos from the file system, and that requires a really fat byte as well. So this is a pretty incredible supercomputer. So this is a GPU cluster. Next up, we're really hoping that we're currently working on Project Dojo, which will take this to next level. But I'm not ready to sort of reveal any more details about that at this point.
Okay, so a couple of really interesting points here from Andre. Of course, one that sticks out is him saying that he thinks it's the fifth most powerful supercomputer in the world. His slide there lists it at 1.8 exaflops, but we need a little bit more information to determine the rankings. We've actually gone through this in an episode before, so I'm not going to spend much time on that here. But I will link to that episode in the description if you're curious to learn more about that. And I'd also recommend reading the pinned comment on that video as well. Much more important than the specific ranking is the fact that Tesla even has this level of compute power and that they are utilizing it and that they want to utilize even more with Project Dojo, which Andre said is the next step beyond this computer that he thinks is the fifth most powerful in the world. Pretty hard to comprehend what the next step is if that's where Tesla already is at today. And this is just one of their three clusters, apparently. And judging from another tweet here from Tesla's manager of AI infrastructure, it sounds like everything that they're referring to here is just that one cluster. So we'll learn more about Dojo when Tesla has their AI day. We'll talk more about that in a second. But just to kind of wrap everything up here, Andre talked about how Tesla is unique in the extent of their vertical integration from the supercomputer doing auto labeling all the way down to designing the chips that are running the neural networks in their cars. So he emphasized how there's no third party holding Tesla back and they're fully in charge of their own destiny, which is unique and very exciting. Again, definitely worth the time to watch the full presentation. That link will be in the show notes, but let's move on for now. Elon taking the opportunity today with that presentation coming out to highlight Tesla's AI day, saying, quote, "Looking at holding Tesla AI Day in about a month or so, we'll go over progress with Tesla AI software and hardware, both training and inference. Purpose is recruiting," end quote. Prior to today, Elon had said a couple of times that they were looking at probably late July for AI Day, so it looks like that timeline has stayed largely on track, which is nice to see. I've gone through expectations for AI Day before, I'll link that in the description as well, but what I would highlight here that's just worth remembering is Elon's emphasis that this would be for recruiting purposes. Autonomy Day and Battery Day, similar events like this before, while certainly enlightening for investors, have had recruiting as a key focus, perhaps even the primary focus for those events. So we're just coming off the Plaid delivery event, which ended up being exactly what Tesla said it was going to be. Let's just keep that in mind as AI Day hopefully approaches here pretty soon. Speaking of pretty soon, we are now less than 2 weeks away from the end of the second quarter. And as such, right on cue, we have another leaked email from Elon Musk, this one a little bit less exciting than previous quarter's leaked emails. Straight and to the point, Electrek reporting late on Friday evening that Elon Musk sent an email to employees saying, quote, "Overall, we are executing well, but the next 12 days are super important for production and delivery this quarter. Please go all out," end quote. So not much there to make an inference out of. I'm not going to put a ton of weight into the email because of that. If I had to make an inference, I would say that I do expect Tesla this quarter to hit delivery and production records. So Elon had the opportunity to use that as a potential motivator. He's done that in past leaked emails, but he did not in this case. So maybe Tesla is going to exceed that by a significant enough amount that trying to mention it as motivation would seem inauthentic or disingenuous. Or maybe Elon suspected that it might get leaked, like many times it has in the past, so he didn't want to include anything specific. I think that's most likely. Or if you want to take the really bearish stance, maybe he doesn't feel like a record is achievable, but I doubt that's the case. So anyway, just not enough there for me to make really any inference from it. Next here, a quick update on the Tesla app. Tesla has added a subscribe section to the upgrades portion of the Tesla app. Of course, Tesla has said that they are pretty close to starting to offer FSD subscriptions, so maybe a sign that that is close. Perhaps they would turn it on in Q3, but it's not there yet. Right now, it's just got things like premium connectivity. So Tesla's desktop website has actually been structured like this for quite a while, but now the app updated as well. Next up, we've got a couple more details on the Plaid Model S from Motor Trend. A couple more articles after that initial review have come out. Notably here, they did a supercharging test from about 5% up to a little over 95%. So we get a really nice look at the charging curve. And as we had talked about before, the 250 kilowatt rate is lasting longer in the new Model S. Looks like it's going up to about that 33-34% line before starting to taper off. Remember, as we talked about last week, looking at the Model 3 charge curves on version 3 supercharger, that's about 10% later than we've seen. Motor Trend in this article also does say that Tesla is still using the 18650 form factor, obviously with an updated chemistry. Yes, they could be wrong about that, but Motor Trend usually reports pretty well on Tesla, and they did have the information about the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack size. So don't fall for the YouTubers that are trying to get you to click on these theories of why Tesla's actually using 4680s in the new Plaid. It's just not happening. They also did a little bit of range testing and found pretty close results to the EPA estimate. And as a reminder, this was with the 21-inch wheels, so those are less efficient, keep that in mind, but Motor Trend did share that out as well. And then they also had a second article comparing the Plaid versus some of their other high-performance cars, things like horsepower, obviously 0 to 60 in quarter-mile times, peak acceleration, so max G, and of course my favorite, base price. Last quick piece on the Plaid, Tesla did take a top spot in Top Gear's top 9 rankings for reinventions of the steering wheel, the Model S Plaid yoke, taking the number 4 slot on their list. Next here is another interesting find from Toby Lind on Twitter from the Giga Berlin documents that were published last week. This is a timeline breakdown by Surface for Giga Berlin, and it looks like the latest timelines extend out to April of 2022, with the Mittelspange, which Toby Lind says is the middle row of supply building, extending out to that point, as well as the installation of ST2, which I'm not sure exactly what that would be. Couple other interesting ones, installation of GA, which I assume would be General Assembly, but could be something else. But that is scheduled for completion in November, which matches up with the rumored timeline that we heard last week of start of production being November as well. Then there's also installation of CA, maybe Cell Assembly, as well as Cell, planned for October completion, and then installation of BP, maybe something battery related there, scheduled for completion in December. So good to see those timelines. We'll continue to keep an eye out for any more information from those documents. And then last thing today, there's been some things on Twitter, and CNBC had an article as well about Jerome Guillen exercising some of his options and likely selling shares after leaving Tesla. So just wanted to give my thoughts on this. First of all, the number that they said, 274 million, that is an estimate from a director of research at a company. So even though their headline is based off of an estimate, they don't state that in the headline. Personally, I don't care enough about this at all to dig into this and figure out exactly how many options Jerome Guillen exercised and then sold and things like that, because it's completely normal for an executive after departing a company to exercise the options. I think they only have like 90 days to do that. And then exercising options is a taxable event, so you're creating tens of millions of dollars of tax liability. You're going to need to sell some shares of those options you've just exercised, unless you decide you want to, for some reason, sell off a bunch of other assets to cover that tax liability and somehow be even more all in on the company you just left. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So regardless of someone's opinion of the company when they leave, they're extremely likely to sell at least some shares. I'm guessing Jerome probably sold more than he needed just to cover the tax liability. But again, who really cares? He's got hundreds of millions of dollars now. Not everyone's going to hold their shares forever. That being said, apparently he does still have some exercisable options, so looks like he didn't even fully divest from Tesla yet. But even if he did, that's not something that would worry me any more than Jerome leaving in the first place. Selling shares after that should be pretty much expected. We saw J.B. Straubel, when he left Tesla, sell a significant portion of his shares as well. And unfortunately, that happened before the really big run-up. So obviously, that wasn't representative of Tesla's trajectory, and J.B. was a higher level and also seemed to leave on pretty good terms. So again, not something I'm reading into, but I knew if I didn't talk about it, I'd get some questions on that today, so just wanted to be complete. But that is where we'll leave it for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, June 22nd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.